Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
G&D welcoming you back on The Fan. I've been looking at videos over the last few minutes online of people in the Virginia, Maryland too, areas inside the Beltway of a storm that just came through that I guess is headed our way in the nation's capital. And we're looking at chunks of hail. And it's windy. It's gross. I mean, the videos are pretty startling. You don't see them very often.
No, I kind of wasn't. I saw a severe thunderstorm warning, and I said, okay, I guess I'll keep doing the show, and then I'll go home later. You know what I mean? It didn't occur to me twice. And apparently, this is pretty nasty, folks out there to the west of us.
A woman in Alexandria posted a video of her car just getting pelted. Yeah. And I guess she went out and grabbed some of the hail. And it looks like ice cubes you would just
from
put
the tray?
Just basically, yeah, that you would put in your drink. That's what it looks like. So, if you've experienced the storm that's coming our way right now in the nation's capital,
be safe.
Tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. Let us know what we are in for. If you're out on the roads, obviously, and you're dealing with it, drive safely. Let's get to the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app today. Visit BetQL.com. Ben Raby, Caps Radio Network, joins us in the wake of another first-round exit. Ben, I guess before we look ahead to the offseason, how would you sum up what happened against the Panthers in this series?
Yeah, I would sum it up by acknowledging a common belief, common thought, nothing original here, is that they were there, they were in it, they were good, they were very good at times, but they just weren't good or very good for long enough. And it's tough to play the quote-unquote full 60-minute game, but you try to play something as close to it. And certainly if you look at games 4, 5, and 6, they were good in snippets, they were good in pockets. In some cases there, they jumped out to early leads. But some self-inflicted wounds, some turnovers, some issues of that nature, some of which were committed by some more veteran players, ultimately opened the door for a Florida Panthers team that if you open that door for them, they will bust right through it. And to the Panthers' credit, they did. But, one that I think we'll remember this as a series where the underdog Capitals were in it and had a chance, but ultimately may have cost themselves the opportunity to at least extend it to as far as 7 games.
So, Benjamin, I was hanging out with a bunch of youngsters this past weekend, a bunch of 30-year-old guys with their futures ahead of them. And me, the grizzled old gray beard, I guess now gray mustached idiot, was basically, their story was from a Capitals perspective, right? They're like, the Caps messed up, or the Caps screwed this up. And I kind of kept saying, you guys, that Florida team is better than they are. That Florida team is really good. And I know this is from we're Caps fans, and it's from a Capitals perspective, kind of in our mind. But to me, how much was this? I guess if I'm getting around to my question here, Ben, how much of this was a couple Caps slip ups? Because I think every team has slip ups. How much of this was Caps slip ups and versus Florida excellence? If you're kind of doing a pie graph.
Yeah, well, definitely both. I mean, again, they had those turnovers, they had those self-inflicted wounds in a number of instances, and again, the Panthers, the highest scoring team in 26 years in the NHL, they weren't the highest scoring team by accident. This is what they do, and they have depth up and down their lineup. I don't know that too many folks necessarily had Carter Verhaeghe, for example, penciled in before the series began as one of the key factors, one of the potential X factors in the series, and that's an example on a team that had 40-30 goal scorers during the regular season. The depth and the ability to find contributions up and down their lineup. So, yeah, that's a really good Florida Panthers team. And the one thing I thought throughout the series, fellas, and I know it feels like a while ago now that the Capitals have that 2-1 series lead, But that's a Panthers team that I really felt as the series went along, you know, a relatively still inexperienced team when it comes to this stage. It was the first time as the President's Trophy winners that maybe they had the pressure or the expectations that they're carrying this postseason. And they acknowledged, the Panthers did, to start the series. They were maybe a little nervous, a little tense. The frustrations were boiling over. But then as the series went deeper, as it got, you know, further along, I thought they did get better. And the Capitals, yes, they blew leads. But the Panthers proved to be, as the series was trending further along, I thought they were starting to show themselves as certainly the better team here.
Ben Raby, Caps Radio Network. All right, let's get to the offseason ahead. So the way I saw this and read this on Spotrac was that the Caps really don't have UFAs this offseason among their core group. I mean, there's a ton of guys up, looks like, next year. But for the most part, they got a lot of guys with 1 year left on their contract. Break it down for me. Who is a unrestricted, who's a restricted free agent going into this offseason?
Yeah, by the way, sounds good. Sounds good that you don't have too many unrestricted free agents and there wouldn't be that much roster turnover. That said, if they were in position where maybe a few contracts would come off the books, I think that would have been maybe welcome this offseason just because of the salary cap realities, and they don't have a lot of money that will be available to them this summer. But Justin Schultz would be, I guess, the biggest headliner of the UFAs to be. You know, that's $4 million a year that comes off the books. But beyond Schultz, as far as regulars that were in the lineup or household names, there aren't too many of them as far as UFAs. Marcus Johansson and Johan Larsson, the two quote-unquote rentals acquired at the trade deadline, they were both on expiring deals, mostly why that those trades were possible. And, you know, Michael Kempney, again, that's some money off the books, lower down the depth chart. And beyond that, the biggest restricted free agents you're looking at, and arguably one of the biggest storylines this offseason, Ilya Samsonov and Vitek Vanacek, both restricted free agents, both with some arbitration rights. So, again, they're both going to likely get pay raises, which is why, by the way, I feel that it was also a little bit of a missed opportunity here. In the salary cap era, you had two goaltenders who really weren't making a whole lot of money, and neither of them are going to break the bank moving forward, but you had two goaltenders in-house who, between them, weren't making a whole lot of money, and you couldn't fully, obviously, take advantage of that.
No, and they tried to, and just couldn't get one of those guys to steal the job. Now, eventually, Samsonov played well in this series, and I think was not the reason why they got eliminated. You can disagree with that if you'd like. But let's try to figure out then, Ben, like where they go. Because they've got huge contracts to guys that aren't going anywhere, right? They made the decision correctly in Ovechkin's case that he's going to retire a Capital. They paid Backstrom for services already rendered. They got 3 years left on that deal. That ultimately, if it's not already, just being frank, I love Nicky, but that's an albatross of sorts. They've got Evgeny Kuznetsov at $7.8 million. He bounces back. He looks well worth that. If he plays like he did this year, Oshie, really good season, 6 goals, 6 games. There's going to be a time a couple years from now maybe where 5.8 is too much for him, but the way he just played, I'm cool with that. You've paid Willie, you've played Carlson. So I'm just trying to find some money. Would you think that the plan for Mac would be to package like one of those goalies as an RFA, if they can, into some type of deal where they create enough space with like a Lars Eller, Carl Hagelin, contracts like that, to then try to go get a really good goalie and then mostly run it back with a better veteran goalie? Is that kind of what you would think, or how do you see this?
I think that's exactly it. I think you start with, you look at Hagelin and you look at Eller as far as potential areas where you could relieve money. And by the way, I say that fully acknowledging Lars Eller, you know, going back to the 2018 Cup and the six seasons he has spent in Washington. Pushing him out the door. We're not pushing him out the door, but given the realities of the salary cap era, et cetera, you look at Eller, if you have it in front of you, Grant, I believe owed north of $3 million for next season, somewhere in that neighborhood, final year of his deal. And you do have, and there was an acknowledgement yesterday at breakdown day from both Peter Laviolette and Brian McClellan, that there's an appetite to move Connor McMichael into a full-time centerman position next year. So you do have somebody who could who is in line to potentially carry more of the load and fill that void if you move on from Lars Eller as one of your full-time centermen. Carl Hagelin, you know, with the eye injury, is that going to be an LTIR situation? Is it a contract you're potentially moving out via trade? They do have, again, sort of the understudy ready in Axel Janssen-Fjällby. Again, we're talking about a fourth-line winger, but somebody nonetheless who could handle penalty kill minutes, brings a lot of the elements that a Carl Hagelin does, but at a much lesser cap hit. So you do have in-house options if you move on from either of those, Eller or Hagelin, that you could start to put the puzzle together, relieve yourself of some cap space, and then likely invest it in a more veteran goaltender. So that's definitely a realistic option, you know, that could be considered as far as trying to fill the puzzle pieces.
Ben Raby with us here. Oh, Grant and Danny breaking down the caps and kind of looking ahead to what the future holds. So, Ben, to me, the biggest thing going on here, because to you and Grant's point, you're 100% right. There's not a lot of flexibility, a lot of long-term deals at huge cap figures for kind of the core top of this roster. But the biggest thing to me was Nicklas Backstrom kind of saying the quiet part out loud when it came to his hip. You know, like we sort of do this at the end of every season. We go, well, they're older, they're worn down, and this kind of happens. They seem to get tired. They could use some young legs or some way to kind of, you know, help this. But Backstrom basically like, yeah, it may never be the same again. And I kind of look up and I go, oh, well, there's 4 more years on on that deal. Oh, man, oh, man. What does that mean? I mean, that's $9 million. If you don't get $9 million worth of production, I don't care how savvy your moves are. It's just really hard to compete at the level that we want them to compete at. I don't really have a question other than to say, oh, my God.
Yeah. No, the antenna definitely went up when it was acknowledged in the nature it was at the end of the season. You know, we all had an idea that this clearly was an issue that slowed Nicklas Backstrom throughout the season. His season, of course, didn't start until mid-December. Never quite looked himself. He acknowledged he didn't always feel himself. The mobility clearly taking a hit with that hip issue. That being said, to hear it from him yesterday, acknowledging that the hip never will be back to 100%, back to what it needs to be, and that all options are being considered. One would think off-season surgery would be on the table. But beyond that, I mean, General Manager Brian McClellan was asked straight up, you know, could this lead to a retirement for Backstrom? And he just said, you know, they're going to explore all options. So obviously that would be a last resort. And clearly we're not pushing him out the door by any means. But no, certainly there's an acknowledgement that, whew, this was a very difficult year. And you wonder, with 4 years remaining on that deal at north of $9 million, first off, you just hope as the individual Nick Backstrom, he's okay. And then you worry about the finances and the cap hit and how you construct your roster as a result. But here's hoping that whatever methods he takes care of or looks into to get back to being more like himself, they do reap the benefits of something closer to a Nicklas Backstrom that we've been spoiled by for so many years in these parts.
Yeah, $9.2 million for him due for each of the next 3 years on that contract. Ben, if maybe this isn't even a possibility. I mean, this is all speculative. But is there any way they would consider moving one of the big stars that's high paid? You know, you, like Carlson makes 8, Ovi makes 9.5, Backe 9.2, Kuzi close to 8, Oshie makes 6, Willie makes, I think, over 5.
5 and change.
I mean, that's your core. Those are the guys that have been paid because they're the cup heroes, and they're the guys whose jerseys are being worn, who I've got, you know, fat heads of in my basement, and is there any way that one of those guys, just to free up money, were to be moved?
I think maybe an outside possibility. I could be wrong. I don't think they would necessarily dip into the core. Like, going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, I think the more realistic or desirable option might be those names we were talking about. Again, lower down the depth chart. Key cogs nonetheless, but guys, whether it's an Eller, whether it's a Hagelin, guys who have 1 year remaining on their deal. But to your point, don't count nearly as much against the cap as the real headliners, the real core figures, the majority of which are north of 30 years old, Kuznetsov approaching 30 and Wilson now in his late 20s being the exception. But the one thing that did catch my attention from Brian McClellan yesterday was that he did say, you know, really nothing will be off the table this offseason. Now, worth noting, though, with a lot of those headliners, many of them do have no move or limited no move clauses, so you'd have to work around that. But I would think, I could be wrong, but I would think that would be more of a last resort, and you look at some of your other options first as far as the potential to free up money and reconfigure the roster accordingly.
Ben, you're the best, buddy. I always appreciate the time. Wish we were talking about, what's that called? The second round. It's been a while since we've been there.
Yeah, appreciate it, fellas. Real quick, know you got to go, but we chatted all season long. Always appreciate it, and we'll look forward to doing it again next season. So thank you.
Yes, indeed,
yeah,
bro.
Can't wait, buddy. You're nobody better to talk Caps with, man. We appreciate you. Be well.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thank
See
you.
Man.
What does Ben Raby do during Caps offseason, by the way? I mean, is he just, like, you know how bears hibernate?
Yeah, what does he do?
I'd imagine he just, like, goes into a very dark basement and sits there, and then eventually his wife calls downstairs, and she's like, honey, it's September. Camp's next week. And he has to come up and, like, shave and take a shower.
I envision him just putting on a pair of, like, a flannel shirt, very Canadian. Like, some nice
denim?
Rug. Yeah, some denim pantaloons and big boots. He's like, I'm going outside for activities. Maybe bird watching. I see a cardinal. And then he's just, like, rolling. He just lives in Canada with a hatchet. Building fires.
I can't wait to get him on as they make moves. I'm going to be fascinated by their offseason. For the record, I don't think they do anything with any of the major guys. Now, I have not thought for a second that Backstrom would retire, but he is right. I mean, if you read those comments when he says that, you know, there's big decisions to make,
yeah,
it may never be the same. That would be staggering. And but before we get into, you know, financially, it would be a benefit, obviously, to have money coming off the books. I need to process that as a Caps fan. I mean, that guy.
I'm not ready for that.
Everything that has been good about this team. Mm-hmm. For years and years and years and years, and nobody puts in the work and has kind of been just as involved and as decent in the community and has expected nothing and asked for nothing like him. I love Nick Backstrom. I still remember, actually, I was at RFK Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Right after he was drafted, he threw out the first pitch ceremonially at RFK Stadium.
You do it from the mound?
I don't remember. Good question. And I'm sitting like four rows up down the first base side. Mm-hmm. I was there with buddies, I think. I don't even know how I would have gotten those tickets. And they make the big announcement, whatever. And he ends up sitting one row behind me. And he was a kid.
Yeah, just a 19-year-old kid,
quite
right?
Literally, like pimply-faced. How old is he now? Is he a couple years older than me? Because I probably just barely had my license, like 17, 18. But anyway, he was tiny. And I remember, I think I've told this story before. I met him, got a picture with him, like shook his hand, this Caps draft pick, you know, we'll see him in a year or two. And I said to my buddies, if that guy ends up being a good hockey player, I'll be shocked. Just because he was so small. He was tiny, dude. And that happens all the time. Like Connor McMichael, you see him standing next to you, he's not a big guy, right? And I don't mean height. Connor Sherry's undersized dude. But just like there was nothing to his frame. And then the first time I ever watched him skate, I was like, okay, now I get it. And he's a magician.
So he's 34 this year, turns 35 in November.
All right, so he's like a year and a half older than me, basically, if that. Yeah, I'm telling you, he was a teenager. So I probably was like
They always
17,
looked like,
18.
I remember Kuznetsov looked like a dude that kept score at a hockey game, right. Not like a world-class skater and stick handler.
I just thought, this guy is so tiny. And little did I know at that time, this guy's going to change your life, quite literally. You know, not just the cup run, but this era of hockey. Someone tweeted me, and I actually think this is... Like, I'm borderline going to get emotional if we just keep talking about the Rock the Red era as if it's coming to an end here. But this is a real thing. So this guy said, no rebuild should happen. Think about what the Capitals were before Ovi, Nicky, Oshie, Carlson, etc. And the whole Rock the Red movement. They changed everything. I'm with them till the end of the line. Now, there's somebody in New York who will make fun of that, you know, or whatever. But I totally understand what that guy is saying.
I get the sentiment.
If you were there before these guys, if you remember Jágr being here and the sell-off and the trades that they were making and Adam Oates in the black sweater, and if you were around before what this has been, it's not as easy as just saying, just move them all. Just get... No. If I'm not knocking anyone who's come lately to this thing. You're all welcome on the bandwagon. But I'm just saying, if you don't remember the black sweaters and the capital on the sweater and all that, It's going to be tough to make some of these decisions. It just is. But if Nicky's talking about the R word, retirement, that'd be one of the biggest retirements in DC sports in years.
Yeah, I mean, it's and again, the ramifications are near limitless to what you're talking about, right? Both in terms of team building, both in terms of him, his career. We got to get a celebration together real quick. You know, it's unexpected. I'm not quite ready for it to go because he's got multiple years left, and we're way ahead of ourselves, obviously. But he kind of brought it up where he's like, yeah, this hip may never be the same, which is, again, an oh my God type thing, right? Where you're talking about a guy that, you know, a two-way player, as accountable and skilled as anybody.
ESPN listed every NFL team's biggest hole on their roster. What do they think's the biggest hole for the Commanders? We'll tell you next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. ESPN went through every NFL roster and listed the biggest hole that every team had. For the Commanders, Danny, they listed linebacker. And I was curious. You're going to go LB, you're going to go corner. I didn't think there was really a debate other than that. Those two positions, for me, far and away, could use the biggest influx in personnel, groupings, and talent the rest of the way. But here's what they wrote. I'll read it. We can react. Quote, "We would also be telling the truth if we wrote quarterback, but Sam Howell is a decent prospect to wander out of this draft with. And how many more times do you need to read about Carson Wentz's limitations?" Not very high on Carson Wentz,
right? I mean, this is not from the desk of Danny Ruye, but it very well could be.
A lot of their stuff's written by John Keim. I should point out this wasn't. Mm-hmm. This is a guy named Rivers McCown.
Okay.
Commanders linebacker Jamin Davis was rough in his rookie season, allowing 91.7% of his coverage targets to be completed per Sports Info Solutions, while adding 13 broken or missed tackles. While Cole Holcomb was better than that, he has hardly made himself a mainstay at this point. They go on to say, the Commanders would absolutely make sense for a run-stuffing linebacker like Joe Schobert, Dante Hightower. In theory, Davis is going to develop into a better coverage player when he's more experienced, but they need a little help here because his defensive line cannot do it alone. So this is, again, what they wrote about the Commanders in the linebacker spot. And I think it's maybe a little bit strong at times, but it's spot on in the sense that we stopped talking about linebacker. Jamin Davis last year in the early part of the season was not playable. In the mid part of the season was disappointing. End of the year was passable, kind of. Like, there was a progression. But it never got to a point where he was an average NFL linebacker, I wouldn't say. Maybe for a couple of weeks at the end, you could say he was fringe average. But they only really have two guys on the whole roster right now at linebacker that you want to play, which means you almost have to major in that Buffalo nickel. They're putting a lot of eggs in the Cole Holcomb basket. They've decided he'll be their Mike. They didn't originally want to do that. They wanted to upgrade at Mike. They said as much. Then I guess they decided it wasn't going to be cost effective, so they've gone back to the idea that that'll be Cole Holcomb's job. But you can't go into the year thin at a position. That's how you end up in big trouble. So they have these two linebackers, yep. Danny, at a position where generally you would start three. They have two that they like, one of whom they like because of where they drafted him and almost no other reason. And what if one of them goes down? What, like, God forbid. I mean, you can make the case now Cole Holcomb's their most important player to keep healthy. If in week two he's lost for 6 weeks and they don't add anyone at linebacker, what in the heck are they going to do?
It's Khalid Cutson and David Mayo again. I mean, I don't understand the plan here.
Khalid Cutson, though, is like a tweener safety linebacker,
sure.
Buffalo.
And I like
it. He's not going to play what Cole Holcomb does. It'd be David Mayo and Jamin Davis.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, they were better when they stopped playing Davis and converted a safety and sort of made something up, right? And they had a guy play a position he didn't want to do. You know, that says a lot about two people. One, Landon Collins and his acumen at safety, and two, about Jamin Davis. When they just stopped trying to put the round peg in the square hole or the square peg in the round hole, whichever the analogy is, about Davis, the middle linebacker, just kind of admitted, yeah, that ain't what he is. He's here to cover, and he didn't even do it that great, to be honest with you. Basically, he is a gift for the offense if they want to run the ball in his general direction. He's not going to take it on blockers, and I don't know how much better that's really ever going to get. It's a marginal improvement there. But anyway, I would pick linebacker over cornerback. At least there are guys that have done NFL things at corner, and there's a prospect there in St. Juice, the guy that I'm jury's still out on. I'm not counting on it by any stretch. But if you're asking me which is the weaker position, right now there are two linebackers. One of them I thought played pretty well last year in Cole Holcomb. That's who's on the roster. The rest are special teamers. The rest are guys that are, you know, converted fullbacks or special teams dudes or somebody that they drafted in the fifth round to cover punts. It's not a great situation there at linebacker, which again speaks to a couple things. One, they haven't addressed it, and two, how much of a failing that first round pick last year really was.
I do feel like they should be able to add there. Now, they have to at some point do it, but you're going to be able to get some type of veteran who can, for lack of better description, flow to the ball and get a guy to the ground. You know, just like make tackles. I mean, they threw a couple names out there of, you know, the types of players that would be nice upgrades for Washington. I have to think inevitably they're going to sign a linebacker. And I think Joe Schobert is an example who played in Cleveland, Jacksonville, a couple other places. He's 28 years old. I think he played at Wisconsin in college. Like, that's a guy they could just sign and have as depth. It'll cost $1 million, a couple million bucks. And now he's better than Mayo. He might be able to give you whatever Cole Holcomb does. I think Holcomb, based on his speed and his youth, is actually a better football player. But, like, I would probably take him, a former Pro Bowler who at one point in time made 140 tackles, over Jamin Davis. If Davis had to slide over and play the middle because Holcomb was out, as an example. And maybe that's their thought. Maybe they're thinking, you can always bring in a linebacker. Mm-hmm. Like, they signed Mason Foster off the street at one point, and he ended up leading him in tackles for a couple of years. I don't know if that's their thought process, but I think it's harder to find a corner who's going to be good this season than a linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, there are linebackers who you've heard of available right now. I'm not singing their praises. I'm just saying you've heard of Dante Hightower, Anthony Barr, Danny Trevathan, you know, KJ Wright, John Bostic, who was here as a free agent, Kevin
Most
Minter.
Most of those guys you're naming aren't Mikes, though.
No, I'm just saying, but like throwing a number at the problem or throwing a body at the problem, the ability to significantly upgrade, that ship has sailed. That's gone. That was a guy named Bobby Wagner. That's out of here. Now this is, do you have a third body to play a 4-3 at some point? Do you have an NFL football player that you can line up a 4-3 to Ben Stanek's point earlier on in the show? If the other team opens up in their base package and you open up in your base package, do you right now this minute have a third NFL caliber linebacker that can line up in a 4-3? And my contention is right now you do not. And if they would like to address that, there are bodies. They're human beings that can be either, Cole Holcomb's backup or Jamin Davis's backup in most sub-packages or be that third linebacker.
I guess my point is the reason I'm more concerned at corner than linebacker is that I just assume they're going to throw some cash at that spot and eventually get one or two of these types of veterans that come in and can be a 100-tackle guy if playing enough, right?
Yeah.
Whereas at corner, those guys don't exist. Like, when James Bradbury became available, I thought this is a godsend. This could be really, really good for them. He's got a relationship with Rivera, which it seems like every player who's ever been around Rivera loves the guy. Maybe he'll take a discount. Maybe he'll come in here as a commander, and he'll be the next guy that they sign after his time in Carolina to Washington. And, oh, by the way, you're strengthening yourself while weakening a division foe because he's coming off of his time with the Giants over the last couple of seasons. There has been nothing since in reporting that makes you think they're interested. They're certainly not in any rush. I hope they reached out and just got a feel for the market at least. But there's been nothing reported that makes you think they're a player on Bradbury. But that's the kind of thing that's going to have to happen. You know, they're going to have somebody cut at corner that we're not projecting losing their job, and then they can maybe bring that guy in. But by now, you have to have fixed that problem. You might be able to fix linebacker in the $5 DVD bin.
Yep.
You can't do that at corner. And I guess now it's just as simple as William Jackson's got to play a lot better. Fuller's got to play a lot better. St. Juice, to your point, has to break out. Like, maybe they've just decided this is what needs to happen. We're not going to help you guys with a marquee player. So Danny Johnson, rest of you, it's your time.
Well, this kind of goes to what I feel like their general philosophy has been about their defense is this year, some of these guys that didn't play great last year are just going to be better. No insurance policy needed. This is a different year. They'll be better. And that's everybody from Montez Sweat to Chase Young to William Jackson to the entire group. I feel like that's just kind of been their attitude. Because to me, seeing what happened last year, I would probably overreact to that if I was Ron Rivera. I would be pissed off at how last year went. right? This group was supposed to carry me, all the investments that I've made that were made before me. That group couldn't just be my best group. It needed to be a league-wide, dominant, excellent unit, and they were a disaster for the overwhelming majority of the season. I would go, I'm not letting people walk away. If Tim Settle leaves, I need two Tim Settles. I need a Hydra this thing and make sure there's more. They don't seem concerned. There's no urgency. It's a lot of Daniel Wise is here. We got Casey Tuhill on the roster. We're good to go. And they don't seem to be feeling that way. I think their philosophy here, looking at their roster, their self-assessment is, for whatever reason, maybe it's strength of schedule, maybe it's not playing good quarterbacks. There's no Patrick Mahomes on the schedule this year. Maybe it's just, some of these guys that didn't play great will this year, or their play will be dramatically improved just because. That seems to be where the chips are kind of put in for them.
Corey just tweeted me as listening. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. He said, we need to find another Lamar Marshall. That's kind of my point. Lamar Marshall comes out of nowhere. Antonio Pierce comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching. Twitter's got this great account with old NFL games. And they posted a game from 04, Washington and Philly, where Sean Springs is covering Terrell Owens and Antonio Pierce strips Donovan McNabb, I think it was. But they have always done a pretty good job. I go back to Foster, who had his issues at times, with the fans and whatever. But that guy was just available.
Pretty good player for what you paid.
Scott McLuhan brought him in like week three to play some teams. Next thing you know, a couple years in a row, he's got more tackles than anybody else. I think linebackers, sometimes you can fix issues on the cheap. So hopefully they got a plan there. But we'll see what they do at corner. Do you guys agree, though, with this ESPN piece that linebacker is where their biggest hole is going into the season right now? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. We will get to some of your thoughts on that. Plus, I've got a speculation on what Fox is thinking they're going to do with their A booth. So we're wondering, they got Brady in the future.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, what are they doing with Kevin Burkhart to replace Buck and Aikman? I got a tinfoil hat theory going here. Next on The Fan. So with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman having been plucked away from Fox and over to ESPN for Monday Night Football.
Uh-huh.
There's some wonderment now. There's a little question on who's going to be in the A booth for Fox, keeping the seat warm for Tom Brady. Could be next year that Brady takes over on the A team right away. Could be 2 years from now and he plays another couple of seasons. But eventually that's going to be Tom Brady's job. So Sean Payton, it's official, is going to Fox to be a commentator.
Oh!
As of this weekend, it's official now that Drew Brees is out after 1 year at NBC. I'm not really sure how that happened. I don't know if they didn't think he was that good.
I thought he was pretty good. It seems like, I guess maybe the jury was out on that. I don't know.
I thought he was solid in studio. I thought he was needed a lot of work in games, which is not surprising. It's really hard to do.
I know.
People act like it's the easiest job. It's not at all, and most guys aren't that good at it right away. See Jason Witten. But they put him, right away in the NBC booth for Notre Dame. And, mm-hmm. and again, that's not that easy, right? Not everyone's Romo, and you just make a transition, and on your first weekend, everyone is talking about you positively, negatively, whatever, and you become the biggest star in the booth. So what I think is going to happen is, I think they're going to put Peyton and Breeze together on the A-team with Kevin Burkhart. Wouldn't that be interesting? Now, I'm not telling you to be great or that Peyton's going to be good or Breeze is going to be good, but the best thing you could probably do when neither of those guys might be ready to kind of carry it is to have a three-person booth. So you could go Burkhart with Drew Breeze as the lead analyst, and then you have a head coach there as well for that perspective in Sean Payton. And oh, by the way, it's these guys who have had this 15-year incredible relationship.
Right, or finishes other sentences, pretty comfortable with each other.
Button heads.
Yeah.
Positive moments, good moments, a lot of stories they could tell. And I could see that as a really fun thing. Almost like, this is what every network's trying to do. For me, I just want you to call the game and please make the game the star. But that would be worth tuning in for in some way, potentially. This relationship between these two guys and how they break the game down, how Breeze sees it as a coach, versus how, Breeze sees it as a quarterback versus mm-hmm. how his coach, longtime play caller, Peyton sees it. And then they talk about things they used to do, what Breeze liked and didn't. I kind of think it could be a really interesting idea. Again, the stars are aligning here. You got Burkhardt in his role, waiting on his number one. Peyton is signed, sealed, and delivered, and Breeze is now available as a free agent. He tweeted, by the way, and everyone was up in an uproar, that he might be coming back to play. I think entirely joking.
Yeah, I thought that was in jest.
But welcome to 2022, where you can say whatever you want on social media, and there's no sarcasm font, so like everyone just takes it and runs with it. Here's what he said, Danny. Despite speculation from media about my future this fall, I'm currently undecided. I may work for NBC. I may play football again. I may focus on business and philanthropy. I may train for pickleball tour, senior golf tour, coach my kids, and all of the above. I'll let you know.
I took the pickleball tour one seriously, and I'm going to contact him about joining the local pro-am here coming up this fall.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's a knock against you being in the pro-am.
I know, that's one less spot for me, but I'm willing to do that to get some celebrity credibility there with Drew Brees. No, but I don't think it's a terrible idea to have those two guys in there, because there's got to be some, for me, my two faders or my two things that I care about are entertainment and information. I care way more about the information than I do about entertainment. But you also can't be dry. You can't be like reading from a book and on that play, that was a great play by the right guard and the safety backed up too far and that was that. That's why that play was successful. Like, you can't have that, yeah, right? It can't be boring.
Info over personality for me every time.
But as long as there's some energy, because like Charles Davis doesn't shout, but you could tell how much fun he's having going, I want you to watch that. You could tell there's a smile on his face when he shows you the crackback block or the great route or whatever.
That's why I like Romo, and I'm shocked you don't, because Romo is both information and energy and entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, he's popcorn, can't be fun with I'm smarter than everyone watching.
Totally. And the majority of Romo is very good. It's the things that I can't stop hearing. The squeals, this is the number one play of all time, Jim. This is the play, Jim. How many this is the plays can we have? How many this is the most important plays can we have? Stop squealing. The rest of it is so good. I wish you just would stop doing that.
You could just rip out like the 5% that you hate.
Yes. Because that 5%, I can't stop. Like, you know how you're bothered by my mustache and you've been staring at me all day?
Well, I just don't know why you didn't shave.
Right. That's your point.
You did an ironic thing with a bunch of dudes for a bachelor party. You guys were there. You were having a fun time. Uh-huh. You're locked in, brothers in arms.
Just mustache.
Great. Now you're back in the real world.
Yep.
You're not around any of these people anymore. Yep. It's time to shave. There's no reason to continue this charade.
The Tony Romo, ooh, here we go. Like, he's Roscoe P. Coltrane. That's my mustache.
Who's Roscoe P. Coltrane?
That's from Dukes of Hazzard.
Okay.
That's what he sounds like.
I've heard you say that name a bunch. Yeah. No file.
Well, that's what he sounds like. It's a show that doesn't hold up as well now. There's some elements that are kind of cringeworthy.
Only thing I know about Dukes of Hazzard is that it starred, who was the
Tom
girl?
Wopat?
No,
oh.
The girl that I loved for a while.
The movie at Jessica Cliche. Simpson.
Jessica Simpson.
Yeah. That's the
That's
movie.
All I know about.
The old show, the old Daisy Dukes, it comes from, of course, Dukes of Hazzard. They always jump over stuff. That would do damage to the car, but it was always fixed in plenty of time. But that's how Roscoe P. Coltrane talked, and that's what he sounds like. He's like, oh, Gubbovich Devil. Just terrible delivery. Don't do that anymore, and I'll be all in on Romo.
He's good, man.
He's very good, except for that stuff.
I really think Washington can start 2-0, by the way. They won't be on the National Fox game, I don't think, in either of those games.
It's set up, isn't it?
Jacksonville and Detroit. It would be the first time they were 2-0 in 11 years. All they got to do is just show up and not be terrible. Like, you've been given a gift. Accept the gift. Beat the Jaguars. Beat the Lions. Grant and Danny with you. Very short final segment because pregame starts earlier than ever because the Marlins have a weird start time. What would be the best start time for night games? Let's get into that next on GND.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.